The following content is sponsored by Atlantis Sports Clubs and does not reflect the views of WATD Radio. It's Friends with Benefits on 95.9 WATD, exploring relationships, social issues, sports, and life stories. Be a part of the show at 781-837-4900. This is Brian Stratton's Friends with Benefits with your hosts, Paul Kearney, Gabe Sirota, Joe Coletti, and Bob Anderson.
Okay, it's another Thursday night, ATD, Friends with Benefits. My name is Joe Coletti, and I'm one of the four hosts who brings our listeners information, news, and updates. My Blue Cirrus healthcare show started 18 months ago. They're working with hospitals all over the country on front lines, fighting the battle against COVID-19. I've been able to interview some incredible healthcare workers from Seattle, Washington, Arizona, Florida, and of course, right here in the Boston area. Tonight, we have a great show planned for you, speaking with Valley Health in Winchester. Tonight's guest will be Valley Health's VP and CIO, Jim Burton. Jim is from Brighton, Mass., now living in the Concord area, and has been with Valley Health for more than 5 years. Along with Jim is Hugh Stubblefield, who is the director, project management office at Valley, and Chris Goditis, CTO and Valley Health Director of Technical Services. And as always, our favorite voice in healthcare, our show sponsor, Michelle Hager, and her husband, Brett, from Blue Cirrus Consulting, who has been consulting at Valley Health for 12 years. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here, Joe. Thanks so much for having us. I'm so excited that the Valley folks are going to be here tonight, and even my husband will be on the line. This is going to be a great show.
Yeah, we're super excited for sure. Let me start it off with Jim Burton, who real quickly is a local legend in the Boston area. Jim, how are you holding up in not Brighton, you say in Concord, Mass.? How's everything working for you remotely?
Unfortunately, I don't get there as much as I'd like. I work in Winchester. So during the COVID, it really has limited my ability to travel. Definitely don't want to go on a plane until they've got it secure. And during the time of COVID, if you left the area up till recently, you had to be isolated for 14 days, so I didn't want to do that. I've only had a few times back home, so I'll be getting home soon. There's nothing like Concord, you know, driving into Boston and seeing the harbor.
Well, be safe, and, you know, when you get back to Boston, give me a call. We'll definitely have to join up.
Want to go to the Stockyard.
I love the Stockyard. I told you that back in my day.
I grew up there.
So let me get this show started, and I'm going to start with Hugh Stubblefield. Hugh, as the project manager at Valley, how did you keep projects on track? Working from home must have had its challenges. What did you see?
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having us on today. We've got some experience with remote work. We're a pretty sharp technology shop, so we have the tools to work remotely now. Mostly for us, it's short term. Here in the Valley, when we get some snow, you know, unlike you in Boston, when we get snow here, everything kind of shuts down on the first couple of flakes. So outside of Winchester can be pretty rural. So it's difficult to navigate weather. In fact, one team member actually lives on a mountain outside of Front Royal. And if we do get a big snow, she literally cannot get out for a couple of days. So she has experience working from home, you know, as we all do. So it really wasn't a big transition to start working from home. I think the duration of working from home has led to some challenges. I think the first thing we had to do was to scale back the work we were planning to do. We've got a pretty busy project portfolio. So we had to put some projects on hold, and we also weren't allowed to have any contractors on site, which impacted some of our bigger capital projects, as well as some construction projects. So we had to pause a couple of IT and Epic related projects. In fact, I was 5 minutes from a kickoff back in March, and we got the call that we needed to put everything on hold. So, you know, we put those on hold. We've got a couple of big capital projects, like we're replacing our nurse call system, replacing our fusion pumps, and both of those were consultant centric. We had to put those on hold. We're also building a new hospital down at Front Royal with contractors not being able to get on site. That work slowed down, and we really kind of pulled everything back. One of the projects we continued with, we opened an ambulatory center in early April, and one of the components of it was an urgent care. So we wanted to go ahead and open that because it was going to treat the upper respiratory cases. So for medical reasons, we continued on with that project, but most of our other big capital projects were put on hold. We shifted our projects to COVID response, even operations. You know, the folks that had requested a lot of those projects, they shifted from that project attention to COVID response. So our key stakeholders' priorities had shifted. So as a result, the demand for project work from us really slowed down a lot. But again, we're a pretty strong technology shop. We use ServiceNow a lot for trouble ticketing and tracking. We use tools like Smartsheet and SharePoint, some other tools. So we were able to share documents. We were able to communicate electronically. My team, you know, you would imagine that project managers, when projects stop, you know, project managers don't have a lot to do, but we shifted our attention to COVID-related projects like expanding telehealth in our ambulatory areas. We were actively monitoring COVID-related requests and issues. One of the big projects that we started back in March was the work from home initiatives for all of Valley Health staff, which involved them, you know, managing them taking PCs home, the Cisco network phones home. We had to set up the capability for them to do remote time clocking if they were non-exempt. You know, all of those tasks kind of rolled up into projects, and we were able to kind of shift our skill set from other projects. So some of the ways that we kind of adapted that challenge were with afternoon huddle, wrap-up huddles, where we went over, I guess, some of the hot topics, the big items that, you know, had occurred during the day. I made sure that we were addressing those. We prioritized those and really started to get ready for the following day. And then we transferred to mostly telework. We use a lot of WebEx. We use a lot of conference calls. A lot of the organization is using Zoom. So we transitioned our communication to those platforms as well as email. We use a lot of Jabber as our instant messenger platform. And so we communicate a lot that way. We had a few people on site, especially those who had to touch hardware. But for the most part, you know, we were able to transition successfully to a remote workforce.
Wow, that's excellent. It does sound challenging. I wanted to ask you, what were some of the advantages and disadvantages? And if you had a wish list, what would you wish had during this pandemic to assist with these efforts?
This was a good question. And it really, I spent a lot of time thinking about this. I think one of the things for me was we had one priority, which was COVID response. We didn't have to mix priorities or juggle priorities or take any requests into a prioritization committee. We knew what our response was. It was COVID. And if it wasn't COVID related, it needed to take a back seat. So we really didn't have to go through a lot of the governance or a lot of the prioritization. Now, you know, in Winchester, my commute's about 15 minutes, but you know, which is probably a little bit different from Boston. But just being able to bolt out of bed at the usual time, I could be at my desk, you know, easily an hour earlier, you know, than if I got my lunch prepared, put on a suit, you know, and then drove into the office. And also, I was at my desk a lot earlier. Another advantage was being in my home office, my dog would come down and lay on the floor next to me. So he knows more about COVID and COVID response than I think he ever wanted to. I could see my wife and kids at lunch and on breaks. You know, I'd come up from basement office and see the family. And so it was nice. Another advantage was our help desk was already remote. So we directed the organization to send all issues and concerns through to the help desk. And we created specific COVID issue types in ServiceNow. So if somebody needed a PC or somebody needed something, they knew to call the help desk. And when they mentioned COVID, the help desk put those tickets into a specific issue type so that it would flow directly to a leadership group that was monitoring those and dispatching those to the right folks to fill. So, you know, somebody needs a couple of iPads for remote registration. We knew, you know, it would come in as a ticket. We would direct it to the right group and they would move forward with it. So the help desk being remote was already fairly streamlined. I think for me, the biggest advantage was that we didn't have a roadmap. You know, we couldn't pull out the pandemic response plan and plug in our response to it. We just didn't have it. So, you know, I think we kind of prepared for it, but not to the pace and the scope that this was. So we really had to make it up as we went along. Fortunately, technologically, we're pretty strong. You know, we respond to things really, really well. So this was just a bigger scope of some of the things that we normally respond to. And I think Chris will be talking about that a little bit later. I think another disadvantage is engagement with the team and the others. We all see each other in the department on a regular basis. So we lost out on those hallway conversations of walking next door and talk to the service delivery manager and saying, hey, what about X? You know, so instead, we'd have to start Jabber conversations or phone calls and things like that. So I think the communication had to change, you know, and it was a disadvantage for a while, but I think we've adapted a little bit to that. Another disadvantage, and this is personally, is I can't print paper at home for my work PC. So, you know, I live on spreadsheets. So, you know, having to edit and revise spreadsheets and stuff online was a big transition for me personally. And another disadvantage is remote desktop. So, you know, my PC, my laptop at home, and I do have a separate big monitor, which is good to have the two screens, but I'm actually, my laptop is almost a dummy terminal going into my PC at work. So the camera that I would have would be showing my empty office and not, you know, me sitting in my work desk. So there's some hoops to go through to get that face-to-face engagement. That would be one of the disadvantages. So my voice is all over the place, but very few people have seen my face in the last 3 months, which might also be an advantage, I guess.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people are affected by that and making those changes. And so tell me, please, what's the plan going forward? Are you going full on-site or part-time? How are you going to manage that?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And the organization is just now starting to think through this. You know, when one of the big challenges that we had back in February and March was, you know, what does senior leadership want to do? And what are the HR policies around? So, you know, until senior leadership said, okay, send everybody home, we weren't going to start sending everybody home. We weren't going to send other departments home. So we really had to balance that, what some of those managers were asking for based on when HR was going to give us the green light to send people home. So I don't think we have a plan yet. I know personally, and of course, Jim could always veto this. I think we're going to go with more of a hybrid plan when we do go back. You know, we're already doing 1 or 2 days remote now. So we'll probably do some sort of a hybrid of a couple days in the office and the rest of the week at home. I think as people get used to it, it's a little bit easier, you know, easier to manage, and the expectations are a little bit easier, but we'll probably do some sort of a hybrid. I think it's really shifted the way the organization works and the expectation of work. And we have been successful working remotely. You know, we have not missed a payroll. Our vendors are still getting paid. We're still doing the financial closes. Patients are still being scheduled. Patient accounts is still, you know, dropping charges and routing charges. So business has continued. So I think we're really going to need to evaluate what our strategy is. But I'm not that worried about the IT department and the Epic group. You know, we've done pretty good and we adapt to things pretty quickly. And we all work fairly independently to a large degree. What I'm real curious about is how some of those back office departments respond to this. So, you know, patient accounting and central scheduling and finance and payroll have all been more in the office centric departments. So I'll be really curious to see how those leaders continue. They want to continue working remotely, or there is a strong desire to have all those people back on site. So I'm curious more about them than the IT department, honestly.
Yep. We know that medical records coding can be done off site, but what when maybe patient accounting can go off site in the same way a coding can? Those are great points.
Right. You know, the ROI component of that too is somebody wants their chart. Somebody needs to be on site to physically provide a chart, unless there's an electronic means to communicate that.
Good point.
We're talking to Hugh Stubblefield in the project management office at Valley Health System. We got a great show tonight. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be with our show sponsor from Blue Cirrus Consulting, Michelle Hager, with a few questions for Chris Gaditis, and we're going to have Jim Burton on and Brad Hager. We'll be right back. This is WATD 99 FM, Friends with Benefits.
Experience the Atlantis Sports Club difference. Atlantis Sports Club and Spas are located throughout Massachusetts, including locations in Dedham, Danvers, and Hyannis. Featuring state-of-the-art cardiovascular and strength training equipment, plus indoor and outdoor pools and full-service spas, Atlantis offers something for everyone. How about Zumba, spinning, and strength training classes, swim lessons for the kids, or a luxurious spa treatment? Your Atlantis membership allows access to all locations. Atlantis in Dedham is located at 25 Allied Drive at the Hilton Hotel in Dedham. When you're on the North Shore, check out the Danvers location, located at Ferncroft, next to the Coco Key Water Park at the Hilton. Take a mini vacation at Atlantis Sports Club and Spa in Hyannis. Play golf, then relax by the resort-style pool. Mention this ad and receive 20% off any spa treatment. Experience the Atlantis difference today. Visit AtlantisSportsClubs.com and book your tour today.
This is Bob Anderson, owner of Upper Entertainment, promoter and agent for some of New England's best musical and comedy talent. If you want the very best acts at your clubs, weddings, parties, or private events, look no further than Upper Entertainment. You can reach us at 781-249-0113. Call Upper Entertainment at 781-249-0113.
Hey, Joe, please tell me about your new company, Blue Cirrus Consulting. This is a new way I can actually stay home and receive quality healthcare by using today's technology?
Yeah, thanks. It's called telehealth. It's sweeping the nation. It's great. It saves lives, it saves time, and it saves money.
Great, but why isn't my hospital offering it to me?
Well, hospitals are being flooded with new software vendors and technology, making it difficult for hospitals to make clear decisions and choose which telehealth program is right for them. In fact, Blue Cirrus Consulting can bring telehealth to local hospitals here in New England. We have a track record of providing skilled advisors, clinicians, and project leaders to support your hospital and help them accomplish a quality telehealth program.
Hey, Joe, how do I find out more information?
Thanks, Paul. You can go online at blue-cirrus.com. That's blue as in the color, dash Cirrus, C-I-R-R-U-S, as in the cloud, .com, and find all of our company information online. Blue Cirrus saves lives, saves time, and saves money. We're back with Michelle Hager, the show's sponsor, Blue Cirrus. How's everything going, Michelle?
Great, Joe. Really enjoyed the interview with you. I thought, you know, you brought up some really good points. There's some good advantages for being at home. Get to hang out with your little bit more. Communication is a challenge. You have to work that out with your employer. But it sounds like, Valley, you guys met the challenge. So yeah. I'm going to talk a little bit to Chris Gaditis, who's the chief technology officer. Since you are responsible for all of the technology related to Valley, I think that got a unique response in making sure that all of the folks in the organization, both clinical and back office, be up and running and they don't miss anything. What kind of challenges did you face?
Thank you. I was reflecting on some of Hugh's responses, and I had two comments. One is that the having one priority, that being COVID, reflecting back on my 20 some odd years in IT, I can only think of two instances where, from an IT perspective, we had one priority going and focus on one thing, focus on Y2K, focus on moving the data center. COVID is a little bit more unique, and I wanted to take a moment here and just that is having one priority. We had everyone focusing on COVID initiatives, and it was a very unique and continues to be a very unique situation. If it was COVID related, we're working on it. And I found that very, very unique in my 24 years in IT that we were able to be specifically calling the help desk. I recall the huddles that Hugh was talking about. We spent about a week trying to get our arms around the process of let's funnel everyone to the help desk. But in the meantime, we did have some spreadsheets trying to manage all the requests. And Hugh was mentioning the morning and afternoon calls. We were basically, you know, reviewing the spreadsheet, and it changed almost hourly. But getting back to your original question about challenges, as you said, most of IT was capable of working from home, but we had to come up with a plan. The tier one, we came up with tiers. Tier one was basically who are those essential people? Tier one being those critical employees. Specific to IS, it was those that were single threaded, those that possessed unique skill sets that others did not. So that was our tier one. Most of those were our senior level engineers. We wanted to make sure that if COVID really affected our workforce, that we preserved those. That was a hard decision. Who do we send home and who do we pull back for boots on the ground like Hugh described? Jumping to tier three is sort of the apocalypse scenario. Like we were mandated everyone needed to work from home. And so how do we scale up for that? And then tier two is actually somewhere in the middle. And that's actually, I think, where we landed. We had most people working from home during that period of time. So our network operations center, PC technicians, we have a group of medical device integration folks that were there present. We typically had a networking engineer and a server engineer, and several others did on-site to be able to be the hands and eyes to keep things running. I did tell everyone that they had to be ready to work they had to be able to drive in from home at a moment's notice. Just in case, we've had issues where there are outages and, if the network took a hit or if the data center had an issue, we needed people to be able to drop what they're doing and come in. It's kind of tough, but we mandated that. That was, they had to be ready and able to come in. So how we adjusted, we typically have a morning huddle, but I think that became even more important. And the attendance to that morning call probably doubled when people were working from home. We had over 50 people on the call. We would touch base with issues that were occurring in the previous day and then the work that was occurring that day. A lot of the big issues and COVID-related tasks were sort of carried over after the morning huddle. We specific people were pulled off and asked to join a later call. Again, COVID was the most important thing, and I can go into some of the telehealth demands from our organization that we had to stand up in short order.
So I'm hearing the theme that the communication, between you and Hugh, and I'm sure Jim and Brad will talk about that as well, but the communication just had to be stepped up and just had to change. So yeah, we'd like to hear a little bit about what's the kind of quick start technology did you have to set up in order to be able to support the patient care areas?
Well, as Hugh mentioned, we're a Cisco shop, so we do have WebEx, we do have Akana, we do have Jabber. From a telehealth perspective, I think the organization, Valley Health, came up with a surge plan for handling COVID patients. So, as they come into the emergency department, and there were stages and areas that as one area filled up, where would the next area be and where would the next area be? But the biggest thing was trying to preserve PPE. I guess most of us have heard on the radio the shortage of protective equipment and the idea of using technology to reduce the amount of times that a caregiver or a provider has to go into the room, ask a question or do a rounding. So from a technology perspective, we were putting in iPads in the emergency rooms for virtual rounding and also for registration. So someone essentially on the outside, we set up a console, a PC, where they could video into the room and ask the patient questions and then close out the video session. So it helped.
Let me understand that, Chris. So for our listeners, the patient had an iPad that the physician or clinician would call into from another space, and then they would talk to them in the room. Is that how that worked? And how did the patient know that the clinician wanted to talk to them? Did it have noise or how did that work?
Yeah, so the iPads were essentially in a virtual waiting room. The patients it was explained to them what the equipment was for and how it was going to be used. It was zero touch. So essentially the iPad was sitting there and waiting in a virtual waiting room. The care provider on the outside would essentially pull them into the virtual exam room, and they would have a video conference, the patient and the care provider. So essentially the iPad would show the provider virtually walking into the room. They would see them, they would hear them, and whether they were performing registration or clinical tasks. So it was really, really cool use of technology. We stood it up, I think it was within a 24-hour period. And we used that, scaled that up across the organization to be able to handle those situations.
That's amazing. You guys did a fantastic job at your whole team just coming together. Do you feel like that made your team stronger? Do you feel like everyone sort of, connected in that one purpose that you talked about?
Yeah, I think so. The morning calls, the afternoon huddles, the long conference calls, it was definitely stressful. I think what we did was we created a feedback loop where the work that we did as we learned the uses in the clinical setting and that there were successes.
Okay, that was Chris Gaditis, Chief Technology Officer and Valley Health Director of Technical Services for Valley Health System in Winchester, Virginia. That was great. We'll be back with Friends with Benefits, WATD 95.9 FM.
Hey, Joe, Please tell me about your new company, Blue Cirrus Consulting. This is a new way I can actually stay home and receive quality healthcare by using today's technology?
Yeah, thanks. It's called telehealth. It's sweeping the nation. It's great. It saves lives, it saves time, and it saves money.
Great, but why isn't my hospital offering it to me?
Well, hospitals are being flooded with new software vendors and technology, making it difficult for hospitals to make clear decisions and choose which telehealth program is right for them. In fact, Blue Cirrus Consulting can bring telehealth to local hospitals here in New England. We have a track record of providing skilled advisors, clinicians, and project leaders to support your hospital and help them accomplish a quality telehealth program.
Hey Joe, how do I find out more information?
Thanks, Paul. You can go online at blue-cirrus.com. That's blue as in the color, dash Cirrus, C-I-R-R-U-S, as in the cloud, .com, and find all of our company information online. Blue Cirrus saves lives, saves time, and saves money.
This is Bob Anderson, owner of Upper Entertainment, promoter and agent for some of New England's best musical and comedy talent. If you want the very best acts at your clubs, weddings, parties, or private events, look no further than Upper Entertainment. You can reach us at 781-249-0113. Call Upper Entertainment at 781-249-0113.
Experience the Atlantis Sports Club difference. Atlantis Sports Club and Spas are located throughout Massachusetts, including locations in Dedham, Danvers, and Hyannis. Featuring state-of-the-art cardiovascular and strength training equipment, plus indoor and outdoor pools and full-service spas, Atlantis offers something for everyone. How about Zumba, spinning, and strength training classes, swim lessons for the kids, or a luxurious spa treatment? Your Atlantis membership allows access to all locations.
Atlantis in Dedham is located at 25 Allied Drive at the Hilton Hotel in Dedham. When you're on the North Shore, check out the Danvers location located at Ferncroft, next to the Coco Key Water Park at the Hilton.
Take a mini vacation at Atlantis Sports Club and Spa in Hyannis. Play golf, then relax by the resort-style pool. Mention this ad and receive 20% off any spa treatment. Experience the Atlantis difference today. Visit AtlantisSportsClubs.com and book your tour today.
Okay, we're back, WATD 95.9 FM, Friends with Benefits. Michelle here is with us, sponsor. Welcome, Jim Burton from Valley Health System.
I'm glad that you're here. We're so excited to have you. You guys have been doing a fantastic job at Valley, and you know, you've been leading that team for how many years now?
It's almost 6 years, and I have to tell you, in my career, this is one of the best teams I've had, so I think that contributes a lot to the success during COVID.
Well, you can hear it. You can hear it in the planning that Hugh and his teams have done. Chris, his team, just leading the charge on the technology side and meeting the need that suddenly was thrust upon us. So how has your organization changed, Jim, and your thoughts on how your organization will be going forward?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I want to add Epic into the mix because they had a lot of COVID activity as well for IT. So the fact of there was a lot of things we had to specialize, whether it was building department or when created a unit over at the surgical center, anticipating that we would have to place patients there for care. So it's a concentrated effort by all our teams. And I think if you don't prepare with blocking and tackling, and I think we were probably, even though we didn't know the depth and breadth of COVID, we were probably better prepared, or at least as well prepared as anyone in the organization, because from the CTO side, Chris and his team always made sure that the network was, I don't want to call it bulletproof because I'll jinx us and it's right after this call we'll go down, but it's very solid and we've made sure that it's tight and there was ability to grow. So from that perspective, I thought it was a fabulous job of making sure we were prepared. So it was a foundation of ours and we were adding on to it rather than having to blow up the foundation and build a new one. I think that was great. And you had an opportunity to talk to Hugh Stubblefield, and the PMO stepped in and provided a lot of leadership for a lot of projects and making sure they all landed at the right time, they all started at the right time, and the resources were all included. The PC area and mobility area and support areas, they were on the front line of this. They were out there. So we had the ability to allow people to work from home. There were some people we couldn't allow to work from home. So they had to walk the floors and be at some risk, even though we did everything we could. And the help desk took a lot of calls. So I want to make sure that in the data center, so I could go on. But the idea is it's a lot of people that come together to create success. And because we've prepared for this, and I've been there 6 years, so I'll say 6 years, but probably before that, we were prepared for what came. We had to adapt. And I think it's creating a new normal where we have to evolve and adapt to what it is, providing care to patients outside the four walls, which I think we're going to see. There's going to be a trend more towards that, a digital front door, or bringing it to where the patient is rather than having them come into the hospital where possible. So I'm very proud from the leadership team. I think above me and around me, I think there was support in the prioritization and the commitment to it. Disaster creates a lot of unity, but it also creates dysfunction. And I think unity seems to be the highlight of what we've been able to do.
That's such a great way of describing it. You know, I think that many organizations across the country, people don't understand that, yeah, we've seen on the news how the clinicians have had to respond, but there's a whole infrastructure behind them, making sure that they can care for those patients. And you guys stepped up for that, you know, dusting off those emergency preparedness plans, but then having to adjust those to such a crazy new time. And now that you're thinking back on it, do you change anything about the way that you supported the caregivers, or do you think that there's a new way that you're going to have to do that going forward?
I think we'll probably go back now that we're catching our breath and see if there were things we could have done better. I know one of the things that broke down for us during this time was the supply chain. So we ordered a certain amount of equipment as a standard, but when things started happening and we shifted to, you know, mobile health and DoxyMe and a lot of other things, we realized we didn't have the equipment we anticipated that we would need. And so the new normal became a tidal wave. So in spite of the fact I felt we were strong and ready to move, we had the supply chain, which we didn't know when equipment was going to come in. I think things like DoxyMe and other things, we struggled a bit because they weren't ready for the onslaught. They weren't ready for medicine, but they weren't ready for the volume of telemedicine.
Right. I think that's true. So Doxy, for the listeners out there, this is a virtual visit platform that was a relative unknown before COVID, and then just became, you know, this huge stopgap software, and in some cases a long-term software. So it's a great telehealth tool. So absolutely. And I know, Jim, what's important to you is making sure you have a great team and that they're a happy team and that you're the staff that work for you and with you keep a positive outlook. How did you do that? How did you keep your eyes on the employees and making sure they were safe and also staying positive?
The time to treat people right isn't during a bad time. It's during the good time, because that's going to translate into what you get back during the bad time. And my feeling is we were very respectful of the employees. We really, when the time came where we felt the risk was hitting a certain threshold, our mission, our purpose, our drive was to make sure we got them home and working from home. And we did checks and balances to make sure things need to get done, did get done. But I got to tell you, our people, we already have, approximately 2,300 before COVID who could work remotely. Within weeks, we added the capability of 1,133 employees to also work from home. And to be able to support that, we had worries because we had never had that volume. One of the big things, and I want to give credit to this team as well, security. We were worried about if your habits in the office, what are the bad habits could be our security risk, you know, as far as malicious stuff, unintentional and snooping and all that. But what we found is very limited issues that we've had to deal with. So we did a very quick, how to get people home to be safe for IT, but also for the offices, you know, the areas and the offices. And what we found is we didn't do it the perfect way, so we're a new way of doing it, whether it should be more formalized. A lot of it became dependent on whether people had networks at home.
You guys had the idea of making sure the teams were safe and able to work productively, and I agree, there's going to be that new normal. What do we see brick and mortar, you know, versus online? There's going to be a balance there, and you guys are already, as you said, poised to meet that challenge, ready to go. Jim, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
The last thing that I didn't have in there, but I think it's important to have there, is partnerships. Mm-hmm. In the beginning of when we were talking, your company, and particularly Brad, has been there 12 years, so longer than me, that's for sure. But it shows you how good he is that I wanted to keep him and not let him go. Having a good partnership, Brad is on some critical projects that are important to Valley Health. You know, we had him in the office working with us on a lot of projects, but when the pandemic came, of course, whether it's a partner or vendor, we couldn't allow people in. And I just want to commend you guys for doing a great job remotely of keeping things going. So now that we're approaching the normal, it's not like we've stopped and we have stopped at 20. It's not perfect, you know, when you have to do it remotely, but I would guess that we've had 80% effectiveness. And I think it would be good to hear from Brad as someone who's a partner, what he had to do to help an organization through this.
Yeah, absolutely. Brad, tell us, how did you feel like, that was nice of you to say that, Jim. Just let me say thank you. And you're right. The partners are important. You know who your real partners are when you get into a tough spot. So that's a really good point. Pick your partners wisely. We enjoy working with Valley. But Brad, to Jim's point, how did you feel? How did you work differently trying to help Valley be able to meet their goals?
Well, you know, it wasn't always easy. We could see COVID ramping up in February, and there were a lot of projects that were going on hold. So one of the challenges that I had running a project remotely, with things going on hold, I wanted to keep traction on some of the network readiness and preparation. So I'd sent an email out to the manager and engineers and cabling contractors. And Michelle, if you will, here's a few emails from back in that February, March timeframe that kind of let you know some of the challenges that I had, and said, hey, we have a question about this data closet in W16 4 East. Is there enough space for patch panels? Can you see if anything is moved around or opened up to create some space as needed? We're not scheduled in this area until June, so we have some time to get in front of it. I'm trying to keep traction on the project, trying to keep things moving along, rallying the troops to try to stay as engaged as possible during the COVID pause. Well, I get this email back from our cabling contractor that said, Brad, I've told you 1,000 times we don't have space. Quit f***ing asking. This project is hot and you those can't get your together. I want the TPS report on my desk ASAP by end of day tomorrow. Otherwise, your heads will be on a platter when RJ gets in town to oversee the project. I have to hold your hand like a baby. Signed, the dude.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
As you can imagine, I was blown away. And within 5 minutes, my network manager was on me. He said, hey, what's going on with the guy? And I was like, you know, I don't know. He's a good guy. He's not like that. Maybe we just caught him on a bad day. So we were able to continue on, and we freed up some space on the switch gear and patch panels and so on. And a couple of days later, I get another email from the guy and said, guys, can I get off this email thread? Start a new one. You have the wrong Steve in your email account. I have no idea who any of you are, and hearing about your closets and patch panels make me want to my head off. Lovingly, Steve.
That guy's not from Boston.
No, he's having a tough day.
So I immediately went to my email and looked, and sure enough, instead of Steve at whatever AOL.com, it was Steve with a number at AOL. So I quickly corrected that and made sure that I double-checked my emails before I went out again.
You got to double check nowadays.
Got to double check.
Brad being a partner and Blue Service being a partner, when you're working remotely and you know the organization and you're ingrained in it and your DNA is part of it, it's easy to do that because you're familiar with the applications, the networking and other things. And I think that's why it's important if you find someone who you can work. This is kudos to you guys. I wouldn't do it if I didn't feel it. But to me, it's important to have someone who you become partnership with, where when you need them or you use them, it's not a new relationship. It's not a new education. It's a continuation. So I think that's important. I don't know if Steve was, but he seems to have gone to the same school I did as far as writing ability.
Absolutely.
Very true.
Well, listen, Jim, thank you so much. You're so complimentary of us and our Sierra team. We love working with you in Valley. We've had Jim Burton, the CIO and VP at Valley Health tonight. We've had Hugh Stubblefield, the Corporate Director of Project Management, and Chris Goditis, the Chief Technology Officer. Thank you, everyone. Just for folks, if you're interested in Valley Health in Winchester, Virginia, looking for some extensive information and resources, you can find them on Valley Health's website at Valley Health Link. valleyhealthlink.com. That's valleyhealthlink, all one word, .com. That includes comprehensive pages to find all their locations, doctors, wellness, fitness, and other patient and visitor information. Jim, Hugh, Chris, Brad, we really appreciate. Joe, thanks for having our show. We appreciate you all being on the show tonight. I look forward to hearing more about how this year turns out for you guys. Love to have all of you back soon. We love, you know, hearing your stories. It's great. Please stay safe and healthy. And we appreciate it. Our show sponsor, which is Blue Spirits Consulting. That's blue-spirits.com. This is WATD Radio 95.9 FM, Friends with Benefits.
Hey, Joe, please tell me about your new company, Blue Cirrus Consulting. This is a new way I can actually stay home and receive quality healthcare by using today's technology?
Yeah, thanks. It's called telehealth. It's sweeping the nation. It's great. It saves lives, it saves time, and it saves money.
Great, but why isn't my hospital offering it to me?
Well, hospitals are being flooded with new software vendors and technology, making it difficult for hospitals to make clear decisions and choose which telehealth program is right for them. In fact, Blue Cirrus Consulting can bring telehealth to local hospitals here in New England. We have a track record of providing skilled advisors, clinicians, and project leaders to support your hospital and help them accomplish a quality telehealth program.
Hey, Joe, how do I find out more information?
Thanks, Paul. You can go online at blue-cirrus.com. That's blue as in the color, dash Cirrus, C-I-R-R-U-S, as in the cloud, .com, and find all of our company information online. Blue Cirrus saves lives, saves time, and saves money.
This is Bob Anderson, owner of Upper Entertainment, promoter and agent for some of New England's best musical and comedy talent. If you want the very best acts at your clubs, weddings, parties, or private events, look no further than Upper Entertainment. You can reach us at 781-249-0113. Call Upper Entertainment at 781-249-0113.
Experience the Atlantis Sports Club difference. Atlantis Sports Club and Spas are located throughout Massachusetts, including locations in Dedham, Danvers, and Hyannis. Featuring state-of-the-art cardiovascular and strength training equipment, plus indoor and outdoor pools and full-service spas, Atlantis offers something for everyone. How about Zumba, spinning, and strength training classes, swim lessons for the kids, or a luxurious spa treatment? Your Atlantis membership allows access to all locations.
Atlantis in Dedham is located at 25 Allied Drive at the Hilton Hotel in Dedham. When you're on the North Shore, check out the Danvers location located at Ferncroft, next to the Coco Key Water Park at the Hilton.
Take a mini vacation at Atlantis Sports Club and Spa in Hyannis. Play golf, then relax by the resort-style pool. Mention this ad and receive 20% off any spa treatment. Experience the Atlantis difference today. Visit AtlantisSportsClubs.com and book your tour today.
WATD, Friends with Benefits, and Blue Cirrus Consulting, Michelle Hager, our sponsor. Our next guest is Dr. Joe Paveda. He is the professor of dermatology at Harvard Medical School. Congratulations to Dr. Paveda on becoming the incoming president-elect for the American Telehealth Association. Dr. Paveda, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you tonight, Joe.
Yeah, great, great. And Michelle?
Thanks, Joe. Love to be here tonight. Appreciate it. Dr. Paveda, thank you so much for being here on the show. We've had a lot of telehealth experts on our show over the last 12 to 18 months, and we're honored to have you tonight and hear your insights on the industry.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Dr. Paveda, what have you been doing at Partners to respond to COVID-19 and to access to care?
Well, as you both know, in the middle of March, there was an abrupt cessation of coming into the office or the hospital unless you were really sick. And we knew, this of course goes beyond Massachusetts, it's all over the country, maybe all over the world, that we knew that we still had to deliver care even though we told everyone to stay in their home. And so what was seems jokingly like an overnight sensation was that telehealth came on to the fore and it became a living room word. Everyone's heard of it. Everyone's done a visit now. Doctors became willing participants. Patients were always pretty excited about it because it brings care directly to them where they are. And overnight, literally overnight, an industry was breathed into life. We, of course, had done telehealth before this, of course, but it was small potatoes. And just to give you a sense of, at our partners, healthcare teaching hospitals, the Brigham and Women's and the Mass General, in February, we did 1,600 virtual encounters. In March, 89,000. And in April, 242,000. So it's a tremendous surge in activity. And I have to say that it's been handled well. Patients have been really grateful, and doctors are coming on board. So it's all, I would say, good news.
Yeah.
Yes. Cool. Tremendous surge there within your organization.
We've also implemented a front, what we call chatbot, so that you can interact with software if you have symptoms, and it will help you screen so that you can start that screening process very, very conveniently with a software bot, and then get triaged to a human being if it's decided that you need to be seen or to be tested.
Oh, wow.
How does that work, Dr. Vita? Is it based on the way that they answer the questions?
That's right. So the screening process for the virus is very algorithmic in nature, and it's what's called branching logic. So have you been exposed to someone? If the answer is yes, you go down a different tree. If the answer is no, have you had a fever, et cetera? Are you short of breath? Have you lost your sense of smell? It's a series of questions. And each time you answer one in the positive, then you get down to a different track in the software. And eventually, if you get enough positives, then a human being comes on and guides you through your next step for your care.
Right. Interesting.
We've seen a tremendous increase in telehealth care with Blue Cirrus Consulting, and our phones have been ringing off the hook to ask us questions. And Michelle's been kind enough to offer all kinds of free advice. Our guest earlier, Reed Plimpton from NETRC, reported up in Maine, New England Telehealth Resource Center reported an 800% increase from last year's telehealth data. So please, Dr. Cavito, tell us from your perspective, why do people need to embrace telehealth after COVID-19? What are the benefits?
Well, there's, when we get it right, Joe and Michelle, there's this magic collision of access, quality, and convenience. And when you get those three things in the same interaction, it's magical, and everyone's happy. The doctor's happy because of the quality part, the patient's happy because of the access and convenience part. And so it's really about choosing those interactions where we can achieve that. Why do we need to continue? Well, partly it's because the horse is out of the barn and people have experienced it and they don't want to go back. That's an important part. So it's important to keep in mind that certain conditions lend themselves to this kind of care. And as I said, it provides access to you wherever you are. It provides convenience and then high quality. And what I've been saying to doctors who ask me, well, how do I decide what's right? Now we're doing everything this way. When we can bring people back in the office, how are we going to do it? And I always say, well, if the information that you need to make a diagnosis or change a care plan can be achieved without touching the patient, then you're probably good for telehealth. And it turns out that there's a lot of things that we do that can be done that way. So it's an important, and I think the other reason that we must continue is because when we get it right and when we scale it, it will be more efficient than coming in the office for everyone. And we simply have nowadays, forget the virus, we have so much demand for care, and asking people to get in a car, drive in, come in the office, sit in a waiting room, It's a very inefficient, expensive way to deliver care. So we can deliver care more efficiently, more conveniently for certain conditions and certain types of visits. And really, that's why we need to continue to do this.
That's a really good point. And I would ask you the flip side of that, based on what we advise people, is anything that you would do in a visit. So to your point, if you can do anything diagnostic or, with the patient, that you don't need to touch them in that process and they're eligible essentially for telehealth, but also what's important during that visit, if they were face-to-face, is still important via telehealth. So things like a piece of paperwork that you would normally collect, whether that's consent for treatment or some other educational document that you would pass on. All those things are still, you should still think about not cutting corners and still utilize those in your visits. Is that something you agree with?
Yes, absolutely. It's got to be, the patient has to feel cared for. That's really important. I mean, the technology does create some distance. It's not the same as being face-to-face. We shouldn't pretend that it is.
Right.
There are many, many things you do with your doctor that are, again, very business-like. I need to change this prescription. I need to change this dose. Let's take your blood pressure and see how you're doing on your new blood pressure medicine. Let's look at your blood sugar levels if you're a person with diabetes and see whether you need to titrate your medicines or not. They're very, very algorithmic kinds of interactions. Maybe it's a pre-op visit for a total knee replacement that's done the same exact way every time. Maybe it's a post-op visit where the surgeon's looking at your wound to make sure it's not infected. All of those very quick things, and we've all experienced probably hundreds of them where we maybe even didn't think about it, but we drove into the office, we sat in the waiting room, we went to the room, we sat there with a gown on and got cold for another 20 minutes. We don't need to do that.
Right.
But the flip side is that the patient needs to feel cared for. So as providers, that means we have to lean it a little bit more. We have to make sure that we have what we call website manner, right? We have to really, really make sure that we turn it on so that people know we really care and we're not being just businesslike and moving through the mechanics of it.
Well,
Very good point.
I love that word, website manner. That's new. Put that down. And
good one.
It is a good one.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question for you before Michelle asks you her last question. For those naysayers that are still worried about telehealth and telehealth services and practicing telehealth, what's your advice to them?
Well, it's interesting. So it's a layered response. When we brought in electronic records, and that started in about 2008, 2009, and through the next 10 years, they really became standard of care. We had a few doctors retire because they just were used to doing the 3x5 index cards, and that was how they were going to do it, and they just couldn't type or didn't want to type or didn't want to hire a scribe or whatever it might be. So I'm sure that there will be some doctors who, if this becomes standard of care, there probably will be some that leave the profession because they just don't want to do it this way. I think that's kind of sad because we need all the help we can get.
Sure.
But with that said, we can't demand people practice a certain way. That's not what this is about. This is about a different tool in the tool belt. So I would say if you're willing, and again, the thing about the virus that's been interesting for with regards to telehealth is we force people to try new things, and people who tried new things, and I've heard so many stories from, again, the orthopedic surgeons. I never thought I could do all this pre-op, post-op, physical therapy. Everything but the procedure can be done virtually, and they're saying this is great. It's so much more convenient for the patients, and it's more efficient, and so. People who, you know, if try it, it's, I, when I was a kid, and I don't remember the people in the
commercial.
Yeah,
try it. You like it?
Yeah. That's my message to doctors. Give it a try. Try something fairly innocuous, like a blood pressure check. Or if you're a dermatologist, maybe someone who's got psoriasis, but they're clear. You don't even need to look at them because they don't have anything. They just need their medicines renewed. Those are all kinds of virtually. And for patients, I would just say, you got to give us feedback. If you feel like you're not getting enough out of it, then you have to tell us what you need. And I think eventually we'll get back to some level of normalcy. We were talking about this earlier. And if you want to come into the office, you should come into the office. We should never tell you can't come into the office for something. But
right.
We should make those digital experiences so compelling that you look at it and say, why would I want to come into the office? Because I just had such a great experience doing this digitally. So that's really our call to action, I think, to make our patients feel comfortable.
It's a great answer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's also a call to action to the vendors that are in the market to improve and evolve so that it addresses the needs of both the patient's comfort, website manner, and the physician's and ease of use.
Well, and you bring up a good point, and I used to say that there were too many friction points. We didn't make it easy for anyone, and it's still going to be a challenge. Right now, of course, you can do telehealth with FaceTime or Skype or Zoom, anything else, because the government has eased those regulations. Those regulations won't stay eased forever, and maybe on the technology side, that's appropriate because it's very chaotic that way. So I do think that we should make sure that as we go into this next phase, that we should pressure people to design simple, easy-to-use solutions, not just for patients. That's important. That some people, it's overwhelming to them to download something, put in their Apple ID that they don't remember, register for something. They feel like they've registered 10 other times. We should make all that easy. And again, for doctors as well, if you're a three-doctor practice, you can't hire IT consultants. You can't do an RFP. You're overwhelmed by this stuff. So we have to make it easy for everyone. That's a real important call to action for the industry. I completely agree with that.
Yeah, very important. And you touched on the fact that during the declaration of emergency, some things have been waived. And that also includes the restrictions that we saw on payment of telehealth. So many of the things that were, many of the reimbursement challenges that physicians found and were a barrier for acceptance are now gone. With the CMS and others have agreed to pay for these visits as if they were face-to-face, which of course, like anyone, doctors included, they want to be reimbursed for their time. But historically, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, the Congressional Budget Office has been resistant to increasing the amounts of money and the reimbursement to have it be equivalent to a face-to-face visit, in part because their concern was there would just be an overwhelming usage of telehealth. Now that we have really a pilot case of what would have happened if we all used telehealth for visits, what we don't want to see that regress and become a barrier again for telehealth. So what's your message as the incoming president to the American Telemedicine Association, to the Congressional Budget Office?
I think we have to work with our payer colleagues. The administrator for CMS, her name is Seema Verma, came out with a quote that just made the hair on my neck stand up. It was at the end of March, and she said, "The genie's out of the bottle and it's not going back." For that organization, they control Medicare and largely Medicaid, to say that, it really moves the industry forward in an amazing way. Now, private payers will debate, and we'll have some that are more flexible than others. We'll debate about something called parity, which means, do you pay me the same for a telehealth visit as if I did it in the office? We can talk about that. So there's all kinds of little wrinkles to it. But we will have, I'm convinced, we'll have lasting telehealth reimbursement. And I think the people in the Congressional Budget Office, so we owe them, I would say we owe them reliable data that shows that this is not additive, that it is substitutive, that if you have a good quality telehealth interaction, that doesn't mean you're going to do the exact same thing tomorrow in the office and bill them twice. But they owe us an open mind, and they owe us the realization that our patients are getting better care this way, and that it's more convenient and it's high quality and they're getting better access, and we need to pay attention to that. So if I always say, if you're a patient, talk to your elected representatives and tell them how important this is. If you're employed, talk to your human resources person and tell that person you want this in the benefit plan so you don't have to go back. We need the patient voice in this as well.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. And you touched on it briefly there, but for those that have been in the telehealth community for some time, we also owe it to show that we're improving the care and the outcomes of these patients, and all the more reason for people to spend the time now to collect data on not just a replacement visit, but really that we're doing as well as we did when those folks were in person, as well or better.
Yeah. We have a lot of work to do ahead of us, but it's incredibly exciting. I won't ever have to go to a cocktail party again and explain what telemedicine is to anybody.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't have to tell our parents what we do anymore.
That's a turning point, and it really is.
It is. That's very true. Very true. Thank you.
Yeah, Dr. Gavita, thank you for joining the show tonight. I appreciate your time. We always want to provide our listeners with helpful information on this show, and I appreciate your help tonight regarding the latest news on telehealth across the country. Have a great rest of the week, and let's follow up again. Thank you, Dr. Gavita.
Great.
Thank you, Dr. Gavita. Good night.